All right. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSim's DFS Office Hours. My name's Jordan, the head coach here at SaberSim, filling in for Andrew here again today. It is Tuesday, May 28th. Hope everybody had a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Maybe got an extra day off yesterday. We got a few things to do on the show here today. Pushed back the birdie battle stuff because we were not live yesterday. So we'll talk a little bit about the birdie battle, do our giveaway, announce our winners for this week. See a couple questions in our queue already here for for general kind of baseball stuff. So we got a couple baseball questions to knock out. As always, if you have questions, you can pop them into YouTube chat. You can pop them into the Office Hours channel in Discord, and we'll knock out questions in the order that they came in. If we have a little time today, maybe we mess around with a NBA build. We've got another game tonight here. Last time I was on, which was Friday, we did a baseball build. So towards the end of the show, probably the last 15 or 20 minutes or so, once questions started to die down, I kind of just walked through how I would approach that slate. I know people like that kind of content, tend to find it helpful. Those always end up being some of our more popular videos on the YouTube channel. So if you just kind of want to see me go through a baseball build, talk about what I would do, things that jumped out to me, you can check that out in last Friday's show. So the recording is up on the YouTube channel. If we have a little time today, maybe we do something like that for NBA Showdown. I think it's just sometimes helpful to see that process laid out. So let's go ahead here and do the birdie battle things here. So let's get the screen share pulled up. First of all, if you don't know what I'm talking about at all, we kicked this off earlier at the right before the Masters, a big fun giveaway that we're doing basically for the main portion of the golf season from the Masters to the Open here. Been going on here for a few weeks and it's a lot of fun. People have had a lot of success. We did have somebody tie for the Millie Maker for the Masters. We had a $575,000 split for that Millie Maker there. And then we had a Millie Maker win on the PGA Championship. So we've got a ton of helpful golf content up on our YouTube channel. The Sims seem to be very dialed in. We've put a lot of work into this golf model over the past couple of years, and it seems like it's paying off. This promotion is a way to get a little bit of extra EV playing the $3.20 max here. So you register. All it takes is filling out a short form using the SaberSim logo as your avatar, and then you just play the $3.20 max birdie every single week, max that contest out. You get an opportunity for a bunch of goodies. So I know many of you probably already entered, probably already know what I'm talking about. But if anybody's tuning in for the first time here and hasn't heard about this, really fun. There are still a ton of prizes up for grabs every week. So if you win the birdie, you get a custom SaberSim golf bag. There's a tweet on our Twitter as well showing that golf bag off. We just got them in. They look really cool, really slick. We've had people get really, really close here almost every single week. Haven't had the winner take that down yet, but I think it's going to come here in the next couple weeks. And then top finisher winning some SaberSim golf gear, an entry to a free roll that we're doing at the end of the season, an opportunity to win tickets to the Masters tournament next year, which is pretty awesome. And then one random entrant here every week, which we'll do in just a second, wins basically free tickets to the next week. So 20 free $3 tickets on DraftKings, get an opportunity to do it all over again next week for free. So our winner this week, let me make sure I have this pulled up here, was Giant Orange, who came in 22nd, 469 points. So congratulations, Giant Orange. Had a sub 1% owned Davis Riley, who ended up obviously taking the tournament down. Probably a necessary piece to any top 0.1% lineup this week, but really cool to see Giant Orange with Davis Riley in the lineup. That is a pretty deep sleeper, not a guy that I would have probably gotten exposure to, but I don't know, maybe. So really cool play there. Tough tournament this week. Scoring was kind of just down across the board compared to some recent weeks, but congratulations to Giant Orange with the top finisher prize for this week in 22nd place. As for the giveaway here, I've got the names loaded up. So all it takes to be a part of this giveaway, again, is to use the logo, register for the contest, play 20 entries in the $3.20 max birdie here. So should have everybody loaded up. I did get both birdies this week. I made sure of it. They had opened a very small one after the main one filled. So we should have everybody's name in here. As always, if you're not on, there is a... wait, let me pull this up. One sec here. We do have a spreadsheet here, has everybody's name that is registered and all the names that were in the list, as well as the winners here. I'll drop this in the Discord after we hop off in case anybody is looking for this. I think it's pinned in that channel as well here, but you can check and make sure that your name is in here if you think you should have been. So anyway, without much further ado, let's press the button. Let's see who's winning the tickets for this week. Oh, man. Always so dramatic. It is Lilo with 2906. So congratulations there, Lilo. We'll go ahead and get your tickets in your DraftKings account so you're ready for this next week. Still, what do we got? 8 weeks left of this year. So still plenty of time to join, get your share of those prizes. But congratulations, Giant Orange and Lilo are winners this week here. But yeah, you can see 12th, 27th, 5th, 3rd, 5th, 22nd. It feels like we're getting really close, dialing in on that first place win. Honestly, I probably would not have had basically two first places in both Millie Makers that have run this year before our first birdie battle bink on my bingo card for this, which is awesome. Maybe not for everybody that's trying to bring down the birdie battle, but for the two folks that did win the Millie Makers there. Kind of an interesting turn of events there, considering the difference in the size of those contests versus the birdie, how many entries are in there. But anyway, let's go ahead. Let's get into some questions here, get into the meat of the show. Again, fire away at me in the YouTube chat, fire away at me in the Discord. If you've got questions, we've got two to get through here. We'll talk about these two. And then if we don't see anything else, I'll probably start jumping into building some lineups for the NBA showdown tonight, talk through kind of what my process would look like there, but fire away with any other questions you have for me there. So let's go ahead and answer this first question here. This was from DFS Girl here in the Discord. And this is one that we'll spend a little bit of time on here, because I know this can be confusing for people. I know there were some process questions as well about just the Discord and how office hours works here. So yeah, you can pop questions into that Discord channel at any time of any day. We will always get to those questions on the very next show that we do. You can ask as many questions as you want. We generally tackle them in the order that they come in. So even if you can't catch the live show, you can ask your questions when you have time, when they pop into your head, when you're building your lineups. That's how I would use this show as a resource to you, is when you're building, you're trying to get things done before lock, things pop up, you have questions, you're not sure how to do certain things, ask the question in the Office Hours channel then. It'll get answered on the show the next day. If you can watch it live, great. If you can't, you can always go back and check that recording out after. And then, you know, you're 24 hours away from getting a coach to answer the questions that you have at any point in time. So really, really useful tool here, or at least I hope this show is. So question in this case was, I like to edit my stacks, but I keep getting the unable to edit due to exposures message. I have to force the build to make it and sometimes can't get the amount of stacks I want. Player pool should be large enough. And it sounds like specifically on this question, the issue was around getting the exact exposures you want to your five stacks. So let's build some lineups, and I'm going to hopefully try to actually just break this and see if we can fix it together, on the show here. Chad says I tied for 22nd as well in the birdie battle. I will double check that. Do I have it pulled up here? Oh, right. Are you CG? Yeah, it looks like there is a small chop here. I think I just found the first, the way my sheet works is it just finds the top score, 469, and then finds the username associated with that. But I don't know if it's actually set up to get both names, if there are two names. So a different lineup too, actually, which is kind of interesting. Chad, I'll check on that after. I'm assuming this is you. I recognize this username. If you tied, I will make sure that you get your prizes there as well. But I'm assuming that this is you. So congrats to you as well. But let's get back to this question here. We got our build running here, and see if we can break the stacks, and then I'll kind of talk about what I would do for how to resolve that. Okay, so we have 5,000 lineups here. And let's look at our team stacks. So, I mean, a good thing to note here too, and this is kind of just for background information, is your pool exposure is going to be a little bit of a signpost for you, where you can see about about how much flexibility your pool of 5,000 lineups has to give you, right? If you wanted to jam San Francisco stacks, well, you have 30 in your entire pool of 5,000. So there's going to be a limit to how many you can get, period. Especially though, even if you said, hey, I want to get, you know, 3% San Francisco stacks, it'll find those stacks for you. But as you continue to look for more and more, right? So we have 3%. As you continue to do more and more things, this number is going to be a little bit more straining here on your build. So, but it seems like in this question in particular, the question was about getting the right five stacks you want. So let's try to do some stuff here and say, try to think about kind of a realistic way we would do this rather than just trying to do like 100% of some bottom feeder stack here. But let's say we wanted 10%. We're like basically saying all these teams at the bottom, we want to make sure we're getting some exposure to here. And I suspect that this is going to cause some problems here. Yep. Okay. So unable to meet exposures. There was a comment in the Discord as well about double checking after you set this to see if it actually reached your exposures. I have personally seen that in my process as well, where sometimes you just seem to get this message and it actually isn't a problem. So in this case, it was. You can see we're not getting 10% exposure to Chicago and San Francisco. But sometimes you'll see that message and it actually is reaching your exposures. I'm not really entirely sure what causes that, but that is always a good thing to check. Sometimes if I'm doing stuff really quickly, I notice that message will pop up, but it actually managed to reach all of my exposures. So always a good thing to check there. But we didn't reach the exposures here in this case. So what I would generally recommend doing first thing here is just start by rebuilding lineups. What this is going to do now is take into account what we have already requested here and attempt to build us a more fitting pool, right? The first round of the pool, we don't know what you're trying to do. We don't know that your goal is to get 10% of 10 stacks of all the bottom teams. But once you click rebuild lineups, we do, at least theoretically. Now, we are still using the sims themselves. So we're using the unadjusted sims. And I'll talk more about kind of what that means in a second here. But we're basically saying, okay, this time, you know, we want to be a little more intentional about building lineups that are getting the right amount of the five stacks that have been requested here. So this pool that gets built is going to be built now with that knowledge in mind and try to get us a little bit closer there. You should see, for the most part, bigger pool exposures to those stacks and also reaching the desired exposures that have been set here. So we will see if this works. It may not work on this first try here. And I'll talk a little bit about what you can do to help facilitate that if it doesn't. But the goal here is that each time you build this pool out, it should get closer to what you're looking for here. The reason this one might not work is because we've basically taken the six teams or so that the Sims don't like and forced in five stacks. So we can make adjustments to projections to facilitate that here in a second if we need. But for the most part, this should get us by. But we'll see. I'm curious to see if we get the desired exposures here exactly as reached. So give this a moment to finalize here and see what we get. All right. So in this case, no problem. Five stacks, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. And you can see it kind of, it definitely reached it in a kind of an intentional way. You can see, right? 10% pool exposure to each of these to get 10% exposure in our top 150. We're good to go. So in this case, it worked. And I mean, this was the six teams with the bottom pool exposure in our initial build on a 10 or 11 game slate. So pretty good. We have put a lot of work into reaching exposures more reliably in the past couple of years. For folks that have been around for a while, you probably know that this used to be kind of hard to get at times if you were really pushing to get certain exposures. Now, one thing to note is this build now has really been crafted to get you this set of exposures. And one thing I found is that the first time you run your build, you're probably going to have quite a bit of flexibility. There's going to be a lot of things that you can do with your build. There's going to be a lot of exposures that you can mess with. Most of the time, you'll get the number of lineups you need back. Now we've built basically a curated pool to do exactly what we've asked. But SaberSim now doesn't know what our future adjustments might look like. So if we went in now and started adjusting our pitcher exposures or individual batter exposures, right? This pool was crafted really to meet what has been already set here. So I have found that once you hit that rebuild lineups the first time with exposure set, from then on, you're kind of a little bit more likely to see that can't reach desired exposure messages as you make incremental improvements. Now you can remediate that again by just clicking rebuild lineups. if you start messing with your pitcher exposures, you click rebuild lineups. Now SaberSim knows what you're trying to do. You can build again. But the short of it really is that once you click that rebuild lineups for the first time, I found, because you're not getting the exposures you want, you're probably going to have to do it again for additional changes. So I know sometimes it's helpful to kind of run this build, see what comes out, and then make adjustments to exposures to your pitchers or something like that. Maybe you don't know what you want those exposures to be until you've run this build. That's totally fine. But in theory, I think you kind of want to put as much information in when you're going to hit rebuild lineups that first time, so it kind of knows everything you're trying to do. If DFS Girl did happen to be here live, let me know if that helps. I do want to mention, so let's say this didn't work, right? Because this can happen. I've seen this happen before where you go through this process and you're still not getting the exposures you want. Like, let's say we're getting like 1% San Francisco or some reason. What I would recommend doing then is starting to change some more of the inputs to the sims. So what I mean is make adjustments to the projections. So if we go over here and let me go back here. So in the all stacks tab, you can change your projected runs. When the builder is finding a very hard time to get all of your exposures set, I find it a little bit easier to nudge it in the right direction with some projection adjustments. So in this case, if we went back and started looking at some of these bottom teams, maybe we're not getting the desired exposures we wanted here. You can start doing, you know, maybe a half run bump to these different teams here. So maybe Minnesota, you know, whichever ones you're having a hard time fitting, maybe if it's just, you know, all the teams that you wanted to get a little extra exposure to. And in this case, you're saying, you're giving a more general direction of like, these teams are under projected, the projections get boosted up accordingly, the opposing pitchers also come down. So we can do this here and then click apply. And this will just, it'll make it a little bit easier for the builder to find the sims associated with what you're trying to do. Because really, if you are making enough adjustments that after repeated builds, you can't reach the desired exposures, the builder can't reach the desired exposures, you're really disagreeing with the sims, which is totally fine. Sims are not perfect. There's a lot of valuable research you can do. Maybe there's spots that you're identifying that we're not, and that's totally fine. But you are disagreeing with the sims. So adjusting projections instead is a good way to accommodate that and say, this is wrong, here's the right number, now build the lineups, and it'll generally adjust accordingly. If you're just making adjustments to exposures, instead, really what you're saying is, you know, of this set of viable lineups that came out of the sims, I want to make sure I'm playing these ones. But if there aren't any of those ones in the lineups that come out of the sims, then you're disagreeing with the sims, you should make the adjustment there. So, hopefully that helps there. But, cool. Okay, one other question here that had come in before we went live, and then we'll hop over to YouTube chat. This was from Miami JKC. I see some questions in YouTube chat. We will get to those here in just a sec. This one, on a 20 max DK jukebox, pool size is 17,000 entries, so the contest size is 17,000 entries. Is there a best practice approach to using the default 20K max 10 to 50K entrance setting versus dropping it to the 1 to 10K entered pool size? Would it be better to tighten the initial build with the lower, closer to the entrant default of 10K? Maybe depending on slate size, usually drop to the lowest without going over the mines, without going over. Okay, I see. Yeah, so the slider settings. I mean, so a couple things here. I think probably what is most helpful is to just understand what the sim diversity slider is doing. So in a very practical sense, as this slider gets bigger, you are going to get more diverse builds. You're going to get lineups that are kind of more on the full range of outcomes of a game. As this goes lower, you are getting lineups that are a little bit closer. You are getting projections and lineups that are a little bit closer to the average. Specifically, the way that this works is this is controlling how many sims do we look at per lineup you build. So at a very high setting, we're looking at a very small number of sims, right? Down to one simulation when you're at 10. And the impact of that is that the outlier outcomes that show up occasionally in sims, maybe the Royals score 10 runs in a single simulation, well, the effect of that simulation is a lot higher when it is in a very small bucket of other sims, right? If that simulation is going to be used to build a lineup, and the projections used for that lineup are the average of just three simulations, for example, that outcome has a really big impact because a bunch of those Royals players, their projections are now going to be really higher. But if you have a very low sim diversity or a lower sim diversity, that's going into a bucket with, you know, maybe 40 or 50 other simulations. Well, now it doesn't have as much of an impact. So as your sim diversity slider gets lower, you're treating the average projections more importantly. And as the sim diversity slider gets higher, you're treating individual sim outcomes more importantly. And that's kind of explains a little bit of why you see certain sim diversity settings when you see them. If you pull up something like a showdown contest, sim diversity is almost always at 10, except for very small contests. And the reason why is because in most showdown contests for most sports, you need the optimal lineup to win. So we want to look at optimals for individual sim outcomes. And baseball in general is a sport where it's a very high variance sport, right? Average projections themselves are not very reliable. So you will see higher than average sim diversities compared to other sports. As a slate gets smaller, sim diversity goes up. The reason for that is because as there are less games on the slate, the player pool condenses, it becomes more showdown-like. You need closer to the optimal to win. As a slate gets bigger, the sim diversity slider goes down because you probably don't need the optimal lineup to win. You can play combinations of players that just do better on average because you're just trying to beat your opponents in your contests, right? So there's a little bit more value of just a basic projection edge there. So that's kind of what sim diversity is doing as a slider. Now, for this question, I would say the short answer to this is to just use the value that is the default for your contest bucket, right? The 10 to 50K entrance bucket is truly for contests of 10 to 50K. The 1 to 10K is for that bucket. Now, two caveats to this. The first, and I guess they're really the same, the difference between 6 and 7 on sim diversity in a practical sense is actually probably very small. The lineups that you're getting between these two settings are not going to be dramatically different from one another. I generally say when you start to kind of think about the differences between how different contests set up, I think about mine more as grouping single entry and 3 max together and 20 max and 150 max together, because those are the differences where you actually see kind of potentially more extreme changes in the slider settings. So while I would recommend using the default for your contest, I often don't get so granular as to run a completely separate build for all of my contests. In other words, if I was playing a portfolio where I had 20 max contests that had 5,000 entrants and 20 max contests that had 25,000 entrants, I would not group those into two different builds, especially, and I know Miami here. Okay, let me make sure I'm answering your, I'll finish this thought, Miami, and then we'll make sure we're answering your question effectively here. So I saw you're on the ultimate plan based on your role in Discord. Knowing that you also have contest sims at your disposal, which are going to pick up on contest dynamics in a more nuanced way than the individual slider settings, I don't think it really matters which one of these two that you build between. And I would choose to just build the one that your contest actually belongs to, knowing that when you run your contest sim post-build, that's accounting for the specific contest size, that's accounting for the specific payout structure, probably the most important thing about a contest and optimal contest strategies is the payout structure. Your contest sim will account for that. So follow-up question was thinking more the number of entrants in the box above. I'm not totally sure what you mean. Maybe I do. This dropdown itself does not actually control anything. So for example, like this, all this does is controls what the slider settings are set at, but only the slider settings have an actual action here. In other words, like, so let's say this is, so these are the default settings for GBP 20 max 10 to 50K. If you change this to, so it's 10 and 7. If you change this to like this, right? So now it's saying GBP, super small field, single entry. This build, I might need to close my browser here. My browser's lagging a little on me, but this is identical to what we had a second ago. The dropdowns themselves don't actually do anything. So they're only there to get you to the right settings for these two. So All right, cool. I'm going to quickly. I made the same mistake on Friday last week. I'm going to quickly move into a different browser because the streaming tool we use here does not seem to like Firefox. And I'm a Firefox truther. I'm all in on Firefox, but StreamYard does not seem to like it. All right, let's do this instead. Okay. All right, a couple questions in the live chat. Let's get to these here. Malik says, when it comes to ROI standard deviation for baseball, do you look at a specific number to be around that has historically shown the best success when playing either the Minimax or the Bat Flip? Yeah, so I don't use the ROI standard deviation too much personally. Let's get a contest sim spun up here. I'm gonna build some fresh lineups here because that build was just from the one that was kind of a dummy build to just show the stack adjustments here. We don't need a ton of lineups for this one here, so let's build this. Yeah, so the ROI standard deviation is one of the metrics that comes out of the contest sim. As soon as this is done building, we'll run the contest and we'll walk through it. What it is it's the standard deviation of the ROI measurement. So in a very general sense, the larger that number is, the more wide the range of outcomes of how that lineup gets its ROI is, right? So like a lineup that had a 100% ROI and an ROI standard deviation of zero would basically just cash and double up 100% of the time. It has no outcomes where it wins. It has no outcomes where it loses. That's not something that's realistic, but that's kind of on the extreme. That's a way to think about it, is the larger that number gets, the wider the possible range of outcomes of that lineup achieving its ROI actually is. And I think it can be somewhat interesting or fun to look at here. Just comparing lineups, especially at similar ROIs, right? That's kind of an important thing to note, is that as the ROI of a lineup gets bigger, generally its standard deviation of its ROI is also going to get bigger. But comparing lineups at the same ROI point, you can look at the ROI standard deviation and say, oh, well, this lineup's actually a little bit safer. This lineup's actually a little bit more risky. So let's see if we can find one of those. Yeah, so here's a good one. I mean, at least a somewhat interesting. Oh, wait. Yeah, so this is at least like close. So these two lineups have almost the exact same ROI, very similar sim ROI. This lineup's ROI standard deviation is larger here, 74.9 to 71.5. That's not a significant difference, but what the contest sim is saying is that despite the fact that these lineups have the same ROI, right, this lineup has a wider range of outcomes. This lineup has more volatility and variance in its outcomes. And you can actually see that in the other contest sim metrics that pop up here, right? So cash rate is a really good one to look at here. Same ROI. This lineup's cashing 17% of the time. This lineup cashes 13% of the time. This lineup wins slightly more often than this lineup. So you can see the difference between those two here. And if you wanted a safer lineup, you might want to take this one. And if you wanted a more volatile, a riskier lineup, you might want to take this one. In terms of like practical advice, I don't actually really tend to use it very much. I stick pretty closely to just sorting, ranking, filtering my lineups by ROI or risk-adjusted ROI. I think those are the most practically useful. But the ROI standard deviation can be just an interesting thing to look at, especially as a way to just kind of build your intuition and your knowledge base about the contest sims. And maybe if you're handpicking a lineup for a single entry or something like that, and you're between two different lineups, maybe you want to go with the safer one. Maybe that extra cash rate is a little bit more valuable for you. So that's kind of what it is intended to do here. I wonder if we could find a lineup where they are a little bit closer with a big difference. So this is actually an interesting one here as well, right? So these lineups have a similar ROI as well, 142.5, 141.8. And there's actually, you know, a pretty decent difference between the ROI standard deviation of this lineup and this one. This one's 54.5. This one's 64.7. This lineup has double the cash rate. This lineup's actually cashing about 24% of the time, which is almost at expectation here. Actually, a little higher than expectation, right? So this lineup, only 20% of the entries get paid in this hypothetical contest I've set up. This lineup's actually cashing in 24% of them. So it's exceeding expectation on the cash rate. But it is, it's not going to win as often, right? That's how this lineup's earning its ROI, is that it's cashing, you know, fairly well below expectation. 20% of the entries get paid. This lineup only cashes 12% of the time, but it wins 0.07% of the time. Probably has a lot of those other top percent outcomes there. And that's where it's getting its win rate. And you can kind of see that looking at the lineup as well, right? I mean, this is a Ryan Feltner lineup at 0.4% ownership. So you can kind of understand why this lineup isn't cashing very often. But in the event that, you know, I mean, Ryan Feltner at this ownership maybe even only needs like a 70th percentile outcome to become valuable, if especially if the rest of the stack that you can afford to pay for with these pitchers goes off, right? So that's kind of, it's kind of what's going on there. So again, not something that I strictly use, because I just care about ROI or risk adjusted, which risk adjusted, this is actually on this point, this is also a case for risk adjusted, right? Like if you're looking strictly at ROI, it doesn't care how, ROI doesn't care how long it takes or how wide the range of outcomes are to achieve that ROI. It just says if this played out over and over and over again, you'd eventually achieve this number, right? But this is a risky lineup. And that's what we're seeing with the standard deviations, right? That's why risk-adjusted ROI does capture some of that. And risk-adjusted ROI is breaking that tie and saying, hey, you know, between these two lineups, if you can only play one, you might as well play this. In this case, it's not even the perfect example because this lineup just does have a higher ROI. So you would likely be playing this lineup anyway. But the risk-adjusted ROI is kind of also saying, yeah, you should really play this one as opposed to this one. So I guess that's probably the best answer to this question overall, is that risk-adjusted ROI picks up on some of these nuances here between lineup quality, because it's accounting for risk. Here's another two really good examples. Virtually identical ROI. Standard deviation here is about 10 points lower. And we see, why is that? Cash rate above expectation, still an above expectation win rate. This lineup, very unlikely to cash. Risk adjusted, it's higher. ROI is exactly the same. So I tend to play with risk adjusted ROI for most of my builds, almost all the time. The only thing, I sometimes use ROI for like showdowns or MMA or sports where the payout structure and the size of the contest is set up in such a way that, you know, you really only care about first place. Even in that case, you're not going to do anything wrong by doing risk adjusted ROI. But there are, like in an NFL showdown, I might actually say, you know, I don't care about this lineup being twice as likely to cash as another lineup that has a similar ROI. I want to actually play the lineup that wins more, because that's where the money is. And, you know, you might also end up with a lineup that's less likely to be duplicated in that case. But we have basically made the case for risk adjusted ROI here in this question. So All-Star DFS says, if you want to curate a player pool for a sport like MMA, should you X out players before or after the lineup building process? It really does not matter much. I used to answer that question differently. The short answer is it really does not matter much. And if you know that you don't want a player, you might as well just uncheck them beforehand. I think if you get into the technical side of things, there is an argument before or after. It also depends a little bit on if you're running contest sims. The argument for why you should do it before, and I think what I would generally recommend, is that you get a lineup pool that is more tuned into what you're trying to do already. Like if we had run this build, let's say we had 500 lineups, and then we went in and unchecked all the pitchers we didn't want to play. Well, SaberSim already built those lineups, and now we just don't have those lineups to filter through and find the best remaining ones, right? Like let's say we just sat here and unchecked pitchers until we got down to maybe only about 200 possible lineups that we can play. Well, we could have had 500 lineups to choose from, but now we only have 200 because we built the lineups and unchecked the pitchers after, right? The counter argument, and one that I don't think matters as much as it used to, is that when you make changes before the build, you are in some ways affecting the sims, right? Because you might take a lineup that has Hunter Brown as the optimal pitcher in it, but now you're saying can't use Hunter Brown. So SaberSim finds a different pitcher for that spot. And maybe that lineup would have actually never been built by The Sims. It was only built that way because of the restrictions that you put on the builder. Our Sims have come so far, and specifically the fact that you can now run contest Sims, at least on SaberSim Ultimate, to verify that your lineups are still profitable after the build, makes me way more confident than I used to in just inputting the things I know I want to do before I build lineups. So I don't curate player pools as much. That's not really my way of playing DFS. But I do things with lineup rules. I do things with sometimes like projection floors of saying my lineups need to be above a certain projection. That kind of stuff I'm way more confident doing now in 2024 with my builds, because I know I can run the contests I'm on the backside and make sure that the lineups are still profitable. Either way, if you have a take and you know it, and your mind is not going to be changed, just do it when you know it. The one other thing to note on that point similarly is that, you know, not making those changes before you run the build does give you an opportunity to see what SaberSim would have done, right? Like, if you were like, there's no way I'm playing Hunter Brown today, and now, wait, he's actually showing up in 65% of my 20 lineups, that does give you an opportunity to say, hold on a second, maybe I should relook at this guy. You would not have gotten this piece of information if you just unchecked him and let it rip. But if your mind's not going to be changed, you might as well just put it in beforehand, so you're not spending 71 of your 500 or 5,000 lineups on a guy you're not going to play. When creating a build for a head-to-head on DraftKings, would you use GPP multiplier or single entry? I would do none of them, actually. I would put it onto optimizer mode and just play the optimal lineup. We typically don't recommend people allocate their bankroll to cash games for the most part, and you'll find SaberSim is very heavily optimized for GPPs. There's kind of two reasons. One, cash games don't really have very many like recreational casual players playing them anymore. There's a lot of grinders in there. They're just tough competition. They can be hard to beat. The other thing is the optimal strategies for the most part when it comes to cash games is to take a good set of projections like SaberSim has, or like plenty of other sources in the industry have, and play the optimal lineup based on those average projections. That is so easy to do compared to a GPP where you're balancing ownership, you're balancing correlation, you're accounting for the differing payout structures. The game is a little too easy for where the rake is at to beat cash games sustainably. So we typically don't recommend cash games too much. On our YouTube channel, there's a video, DFS Profit Plan, that walks through our contest selection recommendations, how to sustainably build a bankroll with top heavy tournaments and GPPs. So I would check that out. But assuming that you are playing cash games, maybe you enjoy them, right? There's nothing wrong with that. If you enjoy cash games and grind out, you know, even a small edge on them, and you enjoy them, that you can build cash lineups just by building on optimizer mode. This is basically this build, if we ran it, is build me the top 20 SaberSim optimals by average projection. And that'll build you a competitive cash lineup. So Willie asks a broad question here. How do I bank GPPs? That's a tough one. I would start by watching some of our content on our YouTube channel here. So let me pull this up, since I just mentioned the YouTube channel twice. I might as well actually pull this up and talk about the videos that I'm talking about here. All right. So I would start with some of the strategy guides we have on here. These are broken down generally by sport, of what sport people are most interested in at that particular point in time here. So if you're playing baseball, I've got a whole series of baseball videos we've put out this year that basically works as a course that'll kind of walk you through it, from things to how to review your results, see if your lineups are working. This video is like a single entry guide. Then we have a video talking, this is a general strategy guide. This video is me walking through step-by-step my building process. There's a lot to talk about. It's not necessarily a, you know, do this and you start winning overnight kind of thing. You got to build up a process over time, but we've got a ton of, if NBA is more your thing, I know we've only got a little bit of NBA left, but we've got a ton of helpful NBA videos, golf as well. right? A ton of content in football for football in the fall. So it takes some work, but there is a rich content library on our YouTube channel, which is the best place to start. And then you can always come into this show every day, ask your questions to me or Andrew, and fine tune and dial in your process from there. So. Jay said, so filter using risk adjusted ROI for MLB and then filter ROI greater than zero. Is it best to narrow your stacks down? And then an NBA showdown question following that. So let's do this one first. Yeah. So let's go back to our build that we had up a second ago. Actually, let's run another one because I want 5,000 lineups for this one here. So let's say we're building for a 150 max. And this is kind of similar. So this is like, this is how I would actually set up my process. So you're starting here, right? Making two changes for the DraftKings projections. Let's say this is for like the flagship GPP or the minimax at lower stakes. This is how I would actually set up my build. This is how I would get started. I would make no other adjustments, right? I'm not going to uncheck anybody. I'm basically just going to start here. And then we'll build some lineups and then run your contest sim. So we'll do this in a second. And then I do exactly what you mentioned, Jay. So I would sort by risk adjusted ROI, which, as we just talked about, is a little bit more of a balanced way to identify top lineups because it cares about caching to some extent. It's not playing lineups that are just only built to min cash, but it is accounting for that kind of cash risk there. And then, yes, I like to do a filter that filters out all of my lineups that are not profitable in the contest sim. So I only show lineups that are greater than an ROI of zero. ROI and risk adjusted ROI both converge at zero at the same time. So if you say risk adjusted ROI greater than zero, that's also fine. I just have been in the habit of doing ROI because it makes a little more sense to me, but either of those are fine. And then what that allows you to do here, I'm getting ahead of myself. So let me let this finish up and actually do the things that I'm saying here. So let's set up the contest sim. And this time let's actually say that this is for a specific contest. So let's say this is for the minimax. So we'll take the minimax payout structure and we'll call this the minimax. And this would be a low stakes MME. Okay, save those and then run. So we'll give this a second to run here and then see what we get on the other side. Give me a second to catch my breath as well here. 95 of you hanging out with me here today. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate you watching, hanging out. We have about 15, 20 minutes or so left in office hours for today. So if you've been lurking and hanging out, and you do have a question you want to ask, this is a good opportunity to get it into the chat to make sure that I see it and can answer it today. You will have Andrew back again for Wednesday and Thursday of this week, and then I'll be on again on Friday here. So other opportunities to ask questions if you have them. But yeah, so now let's sort by risk-adjusted ROI. And then what I would do next is I'll add a filter and say only show lineups that have an ROI greater than zero. And what this does is this basically says this set of 2744 lineups is your pool of options. These are the lineups that you could play because they grade out as profitable in the contest sim. Now, if you want to, you can increase this number a little bit here. If you want to say, you know, I want my lineups to have at least a 20% ROI, right? But you're gonna trade off some lineups for doing that. So I typically I put this at zero most of the time, and just play with the goal of having lineups that all graded out as profitable. At this point, this is your playground, right? You have 2744 lineups to choose from. You need 150. SaberSim by default is giving you the ones that perform the best in the contest sim, but you can have different opinions from here. And in fact, if you do, you should be willing to play around with those. So one of the things I always like to do is bump up my min uniques a little bit here. I like four for baseball for most main slates of a typical size. That's going to have the effect of diversifying your lineups. So you're getting lineups that are a little bit different from each other here. You can see this lineup goes from lineup 8 to lineup 10, which means lineup 9 was too similar to a lineup we had already picked. So it's going to pick a different one here now. So you get a little diversified. You'll see your exposures flatten out a little bit when you do that. Is it best to narrow your stacks down? You certainly can. You don't have to, but this is now where you can apply your research, right? So maybe you do want to narrow your stacks down, right? Maybe you're looking at, who is this? Houston, 42%. Maybe that's a little too much for me. You bring this down to 25%. And you know, because you've set up this kind of this pool of viable lineups here, you can adjust that. You can make that adjustment here, and you know that you're still playing a profitable set of 150. That's kind of the general process on SaberSim for I would say like every sport is run that build. You get your contest sim run. You run your you can set up your filters, your sorting method, and then you apply your stance, your research. Right? There are things that our model is not going to pick up on that you do. Whether that's, you know, whether you dig into advanced stats or Statcast data, or there's just an edge that you think exists in one of the games, or just a gut feeling, you think a team's hot and you want to play more of them, that's fine, because you've set up this pool here now that is going to kind of make sure that you're doing it in the best possible way. So then follow-up question for NBA Showdown, should we lock a captain or let SaberSim create it using those same filters? So again, it's kind of a similar situation for NBA Showdown, right? Where like for me, I wouldn't probably lock that captain ahead of time, because I would want to see all the different possible lineups with all these different optimal captains you could play. Now, with that said, if you just lock Luka at captain and build out a pool of 5,000 lineups with Luka captain and then run the contest sim, the Sims are still going to make sure you're playing the best possible Luka captain lineups, but you might have missed an opportunity to play some, you know, more unique constructions, some builds you wouldn't have otherwise gotten to that also are profitable and maybe are more profitable. So, you know, if you think, if you're, I guess there's kind of two things here. If you just want to root for a guy, right? Like if you're a Wolves fan or you want the Wolves to make the series a little bit closer and you're like, I want to play Anthony Edwards at captain tonight, the contest sims will make sure you're doing that in the most profitable way, which is honestly an underrated part of the contest sims. We are like very ROI focused, like DFS theory focused, profit focused in our content, because I think that's what most people want and most people come to us for. But it is worth saying that like these contest sims also allow you to just play DFS in the way that you might want to, in the most profitable way you could do it. So if you just want to do that because you're watching the game and you have $20 in DFS tonight and you want 100% Anthony Edwards captain, the contest sims will let you do that. On the other side, if you think there is an edge that people are not accounting for or isn't captured in the data, and it is also an opportunity to, you know, maybe go way overweight on a guy, the contest sims also still kind of find you the best way to do that. And you're, in theory, if your take is right, adding additional ROI that the sims are not picking up on, right? So I guess all of this is to say, like, I don't play this way often. I end up in Showdown having pretty diverse captain pools. I get exposure to a lot of different guys. My goal for the most part is to run my build, run my contest sim, and then kind of spot check. Is there anything that like really jumps out to me? Anything I think is a little bit weird? I do have on our YouTube channel, again, another video here. Let me see if I can get this back up. Where it's pretty recent. This one from 6 days ago. You can kind of watch me do this process in like laid out for one of the Knicks Pacers showdowns. And I kind of talked about a couple things that I was specifically looking at for that showdown, but you'll see, I only made a couple changes. But again, if you want to, and you want to take, you know, extreme concentrated stands on that, the contest sims will still help you find the best ways to do that. So let me know if that makes sense. I know I'm kind of saying two things, but like, I think to summarize, part of what makes it so valuable having this tool is it lets you play DFS in your own way, whether that is having a strategic or a game flow take on the game that you think is actually adding some additional ROI and it isn't accounted for in The Sims. It lets you do that in the best possible way. It also just lets you just take stands on things if you want to, right? And I have done my fair share of that as well, where I'm like, that I just feel like this team is a good play today and I don't really know why. SaberSim will say, here's the best way to get exposure to them. So, and it's an underrated part of contest sims. It really is. So, it also lets you do things like, I always have a rule. If I'm going to a baseball game, I stack the game I'm going to always. It is really nice to have the contest sims at your disposal to do that in the most profitable way possible, right? Because the way it used to have to be would be I would just kind of force it and let it rip and hope it all worked out. And now you can do that in a theoretically profitable way. So Anthony says, if I want specific stacks like 4x4, it sometimes includes a pitcher with makes five. So you have to make a rule to exclude a pitcher. Yeah. So this has honestly, like, we have changed the logic of the way this lineup rules does this back and forth. And no matter how we have it set up, somebody wants it the other way. So for a long time, that would specifically not happen. So if you created a stacking rule and said at least four players, for example, and pitcher was unchecked, you would never get the pitcher with that stack because the pitcher's unchecked. So SaberSim was interpreting that as do not ever include that pitcher, right? People didn't like that because I think, and in general, I think people are okay playing the pitcher in their stack, right? If anything, there's a little bit of a minor positive correlation there. But now on the flip side, sometimes we see questions like this, like, I don't actually want my pitcher. So you could kind of group that back out, you know, if you really wanted to make sure, like you could do it and say, if a pitcher is used, then use exactly zero hitters on the same team. I wouldn't do this personally. I don't think this adds any value. Again, like you can look at pitching correlations and see, like, if anything, there's a soft positive correlation between pitchers and their own team, mostly because if the team hits, pitchers a little bit more likely to get the win. But you could group this out like this if you wanted, but I probably wouldn't, but that's how you would do it. Melo Martinez says MLB projections aren't popping up. This, it's a little bit hard for me to do like true tech support on the live stream. What I would recommend is hit it with a hard refresh. So that's Control Shift R, which will like flush your cache and refresh the page. And then also make sure that you are on the correct date and slate that you want to be. Like most of the time I see people run into an issue here, they like accidentally on tomorrow's slate or something like that. If you're still having issues, you can fire a report up here. And the team on the support inbox will be able to troubleshoot a little more than I can. All right. How do you make a rule for a few low-owned players? Yeah, so we could do... So in the settings tab, lineup rule, add a new rule. And then what we want is a group here. And we'll call it an automatic group. And then however many players you want to be a part of that group and at what positions. So if you're including pitchers in that, you can say use, let's say at least two, for example, players where the ownership... So we're adding a stat requirement here, and we're saying the ownership is less than 5%. That would be a way of doing that kind of group. Very important thing is don't check group by for this kind of group, right? The group by toggle, and this is a little confusing. It takes a little bit of using the lineup rules to kind of get a good sense of what this is doing. This is more for players where you want to be grouping them together based on them being in a like on the same team or in the same game or something like that. It really doesn't make sense for a ownership rule, which is why it's unchecked. So you're not grouping them by anything. If we save this, what you'll see happens here is it'll create one rule, and all it's doing is it's taking every single player that has an ownership projection less than five and dumping them in a rule. And my browser is lagging a little bit on me again, probably actually because this rule is enormous. So it has to load all those players. Yeah, it's okay. There it is. So it took all 1,154 players that have an ownership projection less than 5% and put them into a rule and said, use at least two. So that's why it took a little while to load. So. Jay said, for the minimax, how many primary stacks should we have for the 150 lineups? Yeah, again, that is a really slate dependent thing that I don't have a consistent answer four, right? I don't often, I wouldn't say that like you always want this amount of stacks. You always want this amount of stacks. This is kind of the base build that I would have set up for myself if lock was happening right now. And tonight, that means that we are getting we're pretty concentrated on the stacks. We have quite a bit of Houston. And then, you know, pretty concentrated here. There are teams that we're not getting to at all. There are other slates where I kind of step through this process and I end up really, really spread out. And I'm getting a ton of different exposure to a ton of different stacks. So it really depends on the slate. And I tend to not like generalizing rules like for 150 lineups, you should have 10% exposure to every team. I don't like that kind of rule because every DFS slate is different, right? There's no DFS slate that is exactly the same. There are patterns you can pick up on things like that, but every DFS slate is going to play out a little bit differently. So I don't like those kinds of rules, and I would be wary of those rules when you hear them. When people say, you know, you should have six pitchers in your pitching pool without any context for what the slate looks like or what contest you're playing or anything like that, that's probably not going to help you. Same thing. I don't like rules that are like have this exposure to this amount of teams per slate or anything like that. It's different every slate. So, Dawn says, do you have to have Reagans or can you get cheaper on pitcher? Yeah. So, I mean, that's another one that I would probably answer at least starting by looking at my exposures here. So, right, this build here, we have built 150. Well, we built 5,000 lineups. Oh, I lost my filters. Let me add my filter back in. So we built 5,000 lineups. We're filtering out the unprofitable ones. We've diversified with min uniques. Now I would go ahead here and look and see what kind of pitchers am I getting to here. So the main things that I like to look at when I'm just kind of digesting the slate here is first my exposure. So I only have 10% Reagans here with this approach. I like to look at my pool exposure, which is the percentage of lineups that I have in my pool here that have a particular player. So SaberSim is indicating that Reagans is approximately the best pitcher to use about 16% of the time. And the ownership projection is 23%. So I actually would be under on this. And I would play this exactly as we were getting this. I would say that, you know, I probably don't want Cole Reagans that's not necessarily fair to say. I'm under on Cole Reagans if I was playing 150 lineups. And if I was playing a single entry, which it sounds like you're in, that's probably not a pitcher I would get to, just based on the Sims alone. The Sims seem to like, for this particular slate, getting cheaper at pitcher and paying up for more expensive bats. And this is subject to change, right? I mean, there's still a couple hours before lock, still waiting on a few lineups. Ownership will likely shift a little bit here. But that's kind of the general direction here. So, and very similar to Jay's question from above, right? Like I like to start my analysis of these spots here with what the Sims say. Now, if you're going in and doing a little bit of an extra research, and there's something that jumps out to you about Cole Reagans that maybe you think the Sims aren't picking up on, I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question, but you know, sometimes things that jump out to me when I'm diving in and doing a little extra research is if a pitcher's velocity has dropped recently, that's kind of a big one that can be a key, like potentially an injury sign that the Sims or projections in general might often not pick up on or not pick up on quickly enough. A reason potentially in this case why you might want a pitcher more is if it looks like they've kind of figured something out, like maybe they're throwing in a different pitch or a particular pitch, the velocity has ticked up, or their strikeout rate or whiff rate or something like that on a particular pitch has gone up. Sometimes pitchers can figure things out midseason and it can take a while for a projection to adjust. Right. So maybe Cole Reagans' projection actually should be like 23.5 points. That would give you a different result in the contest sim. But that's kind of that's the next level of doing a little bit of additional research to quality control your process here. Right. So, the leverage column, real quick on this, can be really useful to identify what the players are that you should look into that. Right. The leverage column sorted in both ascending and descending order is like a really good key of like, hey, this is basically SaberSim saying to you, hey, you should double check these players because these are the players where you're most different from the field. So you can see, let's say you build this lineup, you build the set, you have 150 lineups for the slate here tonight. and you've got, you know, 15 minutes, 25, 30 minutes to research before you have to submit your lineups. Well, this is an 11 game, right? 11, something like that, baseball slate. You don't have time to research every single player in the pool. If you look at the leverage column players, those are the ones that you should spend a little extra time looking into and make sure that you're happy with the direction that the Sims are taking you here. So if this were me, right, I would probably want to make sure that I'm comfortable being very heavily exposed to Hunter Brown and Kevin Gausman, right? Like, if you only have time to look into a couple pitchers, those two, and then maybe the two here at the bottom, Zach Wheeler and Cole Reagans in this case, right? This is, the Sims are saying these are the players you're taking the biggest stand on relative to the field, which can be a good thing if they're right, but you should double check the work here for those players. So you'll see that in a lot of the videos on our YouTube channel. When I talk about reviewing and revising your build, I tell people, hey, focus on the players that you have the highest and lowest leverage to, because those are the players you're exposed, you're taking on the greatest amount of risk. So that's maybe where you would do that on those guys. So Brian says, is there any way to like a certain player, for example, with a star or a heart? Yeah, we don't take that approach. We've talked about that before. The main thing that we don't really like about that is it's very vague. I know there are sites that have like a thumbs up you can give to a player or a star or something like that and say, hey, I like this player. But what actually happens behind the scenes there is kind of unclear, right? Like, it's not, is that a projection boost? Is that an exposure boost? Like, what's actually happening there? What I would do is, you know, let's say you actually do like a player, right? I would use that leverage column to help kind of guide you so you can get a sense of where you're at. Let's say you like Zach Wheeler tonight, right? Easy pitcher to like, up against the lowest run total team on the board, right? Well, you can come in here and look at the leverage column and see, hey, I'm getting like no exposure to Zach Wheeler. And then again, these data points can be useful to you to kind of get a picture of what this slate looks like, right? So he's showing up in our pool 6% of the time. The field's going to own him at 15%. If I was in this spot and I said, I like Zach Wheeler tonight before I did anything, I think he's a good play. And then I build my lineups and I have 3 out of 150 lineups with Zach Wheeler. I wouldn't ignore the Sims, but now what I would do instead is probably say, I'm going to match exposure on Zach Wheeler. I'm going to say, make sure I'm getting 15% Zach Wheeler in my build. I don't want that to be a guy that kills me tonight. I'm not going to disregard what the Sims said, right? Because I think there's value there, but I think he's at least, you know, I don't want to end up losing to Zach Wheeler. I want to make sure for every one lineup that the field plays, or for every 1% of ownership that Zach Wheeler gets in the contest, I want 1% of my lineups to have him in it. So this is what that does. And you could go further than that, right? If you say, no, the Sims are wrong, I want 30% Zach Wheeler, you could do that too, right? And you're just going totally the opposite direction in this case. From the Sims, still finding profitable lineups to do it based on the way we've set up these guardrails I talked about, right? We're still sorting by risk adjusted ROI. We've still filtered out unprofitable lineups from the pool. Now you're just taking a stance that's kind of opposite to the Sims in some ways on this particular player. But going back to the original question, all of that is just much more clear what you're doing. You can make decisions and look at the data and make adjustments like this and know exactly what you did, rather than if you just kind of give Zach Wheeler a thumbs up or a star or something like that, and suddenly your exposure jumps up 10 points, it's just a little unclear what it is doing. So that's why we don't take that approach on players. So cool. All right. Well, we are just a little over the hour mark. I don't see any other questions in Discord here. And yeah, so I think we will go ahead and pause there for today. Appreciate everybody that tuned in here and asked questions and hung out with me here for the past hour. We will be back again for office hours tomorrow, same time, 4:00 Eastern. Andrew will be back here tomorrow and Thursday, and then I'll be back on again Friday. So good luck tonight in the baseball slate or the NBA showdown. And if you have questions as you're building your lineups for these slates here, you can fire away in the office hours channel in Discord, and we'll get to them on tomorrow's show. And in the meantime, see y'all later. Thanks again.